Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Susan Shand, Dorothy Gundy, John Russell, and Anna Mateo. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Susan Shand.
Chelsea Short is telling jokes on a cold Wednesday night at an eatery in Alexandria, Virginia. Short tells the restaurant goers, many of them women, about her decision to perform stand-up comedy instead of improvisational humor. I got tired of being cast as people's moms, even though I was 23 years old, she says. Short adds that men doing improv comedy think all women are mothers. The women gathered at the restaurant understand her statement. Most of them hope to work as comics. They believe that by working with other women, they can get around the barriers set up by men in show business. Long before the reports of sexual abuse by comedian Louis C.K., reporter Nell Scovell wrote a story for Vanity Fair magazine in 2009. Her story noted accusations against her former employer, television personality David Letterman.
At this moment, her story began, there are more females serving on the United States Supreme Court than there are writing for Late Show with David Letterman and competitors, The Jay Leno Show and The Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien combined. She added that 50 writers were working for these TV shows, and none were women. Comedian and businesswoman Victoria Elena Nones set up the Women in Comedy Network, which provided support for the Alexandria restaurant event. I thought it was really important to provide a space for women to get together, Nones says. She founded the network in Chicago in 2015. It now has groups in Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, and Washington, D.C. Nones says she hopes the group will help women find and support each other as they make their own places in an industry that is often hostile to women. Actress and comic Diane Chernansky says she was surprised to realize one of her own jokes talked about the way women are treated in stand-up comedy. She often finds herself the only woman telling jokes in a room where all the other performers are men. It's very difficult to sit there and listen to lots of men joke about women in general and how horrible we are, Chernansky says.
The number of female writers on the top 250 films of any year from 1998 to the present has stayed about the same, at 13%. Of directors on the top 250 films of 2016, only 7% were women. Only 2% of those top 250 films employed 10 or more women, noted the Center for the Study of Women in Television and Film at San Diego State University. Minorities do not rate much better. The heavily male culture of show business has a strong effect on what is expected of women and minorities in the industry. Promises are an important part of Hollywood, says E.C. McCarthy. She recently wrote a story for the Washington Post newspaper. It noted that bad behavior in show business is not limited to sexual abuse or to performers. The promise of support often opens the possibility for other abuses of power. Harassment is one way to keep people feeling insecure and willing to work for free, McCarthy explains. She detailed one of several times that a male producer tried to take her writing and claim credit for it.
McCarthy wrote that when she first became a writer in Hollywood, she thought sexism would end when younger writers entered the industry, but that did not happen. Instead, she discovered, the younger male writers learned to be sexist from the older men. Minka Wiltz says she gets angry when I walk into a room and feel like a piece of meat. Wiltz is a Black actress and activist from Atlanta, Georgia. She has a problem with being asked again and again to play Black women. Wiltz says abuse is a serious problem in today's show business culture. She says the way to improve the situation is for women, people of color, and other minorities to help each other tell their stories. For example, Atlanta, a city where the majority of the population is African American, did not have a Black theater group until Wiltz and some friends started one. In the past, there have been specialized groups in show business.
For example, North Hollywood's Deaf West Theater sent productions of two musicals to Broadway theaters, where they won awards. The Small Ivy Theater Company in New York chooses women and minorities to perform in shows with stories about their lives. The Ivy show, A Real Boy, is about two puppets who raise a boy as their own son. The show is written by Stephen Kaplan, a gay man who is raising an adopted son with his husband. In Chicago, the popularity of improv comedy means there are many groups of performers, including an Asian American group called Stir Friday Night. This group has helped the careers of Korean American actor Steven Yeun and Indian American Danny Pudi.
One of their recent shows made fun of Hollywood for casting white actress Scarlett Johansson as a Japanese cyborg in The Ghost in the Shell. The name of the show? 8 Angry Asians, starring Scarlett Johansson. Wiltz, the Atlanta-based actress, says these groups and many others are supporting the work that the American entertainment industry ignores. I really hope that people realize you have no more excuses for your own success, she says. I want people to realize that the Hollywood myth, like the American myth, is just that. You can create your own story. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And I'm Susan Shand.
University of Cambridge scientists have trained sheep to recognize the faces of famous people. The scientists hope facial recognition may help with their understanding of neurodegenerative diseases. The researchers showed the sheep pictures of people on two computer screens. One screen had an unknown person, and the other had one of four famous people. The animals were given food for choosing the photograph of the famous person. They chose the correct photograph by breaking an infrared beam near the flat surface showing the photo. If they chose the wrong image, an electric signaling device would make a sound, and the sheep would receive no treat. The sheep eventually were able to identify the famous face 8 times out of every 10 tries. The group of famous personalities included actors Emma Watson and Jake Gyllenhaal, and former American President Barack Obama. Professor Jenny Morton was the leader of the study. "We've shown that sheep have advanced face recognition abilities comparable with those of humans and monkeys," she noted. The sheep were less successful when presented with the faces at a new angle or from a different direction. However, the researchers said the performance of the animals on this test was similar to the levels seen when humans took the test. Scientists aim to use the sheep as models to study disorders of the brain, such as Huntington's disease. This disorder develops over a long period of time and affects the brain's ability to work. I'm John Russell.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. There is one food that takes center stage during autumn, the pumpkin. Many people use this orange gourd as a decoration at Halloween. But we also use it in many foods that are popular during the fall season. Foods like pumpkin bread, pumpkin coffee, pumpkin cookies, pasta made with pumpkin, and pumpkin pie. In fact, pumpkin pie is one of the most common desserts at an American Thanksgiving table. But perhaps we should eat pumpkin all year long and not just in the fall. Pumpkins are packed with important nutrients and vitamins. If cooked in a healthy way, meaning without much butter or sugar, pumpkin is a powerhouse of health benefits. Pumpkin is good for your eyesight. The nutrient beta-carotene and vitamin A are necessary for maintaining good eyesight. Pumpkins are a great source of both. In fact, one nutrition website says that 1 cup of cooked mashed pumpkin can give you more than 200% of your daily recommended amount of vitamin A. Pumpkin may help reduce your risk of getting cancer. The National Cancer Institute in the United States says on its website that antioxidants may help reduce a person's risk of getting cancer. That is because antioxidants neutralize something called free radicals in the body. The Institute defines free radicals as highly reactive chemicals that have the potential to harm cells. Antioxidants help to get rid of these free radicals. Examples of antioxidants found in food include beta-carotene, lycopene, and vitamins A, C, and E. And as we said earlier, pumpkin is full of beta-carotene as well as vitamin A. Pumpkin helps your skin. Beta-carotene also helps to keep your skin healthy and young-looking. Yet another good reason to eat pumpkin. Pumpkin may help your heart. Pumpkin is also loaded with potassium. Health experts say that consuming potassium may help treat hypertension or high blood pressure, just as decreasing your intake of sodium does. Pumpkin may be good for weight loss. Pumpkin also has a lot of fiber. Fiber slows down digestion of food. When you eat pumpkin, you feel full and eat less. So, if it is available where you live, try to find ways to include pumpkin in your next meal. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
Today on The Making of a Nation, we tell about relations between the American colonies and Britain after the French and Indian War. Here is Steve Ember.
The French and Indian War was one part of a world conflict between Britain and France. It was fought to decide which of the two powerful nations would control North America. The British defeated the French in North America in 1763. As a result, the British took control of lands that had been claimed by France. Britain was now responsible for almost 2 million people in the 13 American colonies and 60,000 French-speaking people in Canada. In addition to political and economic responsibilities, Britain had to protect all these colonists from different groups of Indians. This would cost a lot of money. Britain already had spent a lot sending troops and material to the colonies to fight the French and Indian War. It believed the American colonists should now help pay for that war. The colonists in North America in 1763 were very different from those who had settled there more than 100 years before. They had different ideas. They had come to consider their colonial legislatures as smaller but similar to the British Parliament in London. These smaller parliaments had helped the colonists rule themselves for more than 100 years. The colonists began to feel that their legislatures should also have the powers that the British Parliament had. The situation in England had changed as well. In the year 1707, the nation became officially known as Great Britain. Its king no longer controlled Parliament as he had in the early 1600s. Then the king decided all major questions, especially those concerning the colonies. But power had moved from the king to the Parliament. It was the legislature that decided major questions by the time of the French and Indian War, especially the power to tax. The parliaments in the colonies began to believe that they too should have this power of taxation. The first English settlers in America considered themselves citizens of England. They had made a dangerous trip across the ocean to create a little England in a new place. to trade with the mother country, and to spread their religion. By 1763, however, the colonists thought of themselves as Americans. Many of their families had been in North America for 50 to 100 years. They had cleared the land, built homes, fought Indians, and made lives for themselves far away from Britain. They had different everyday concerns than the people in Britain. Their way of life was different, too. They did not want anyone else to tell them how to govern themselves. The people in Britain, however, still believed that the purpose of a colony was to serve the mother country. The government treated British citizens in the colonies differently from those at home. It demanded special taxes from the colonists. It also ordered them to feed British troops and let them live in their houses. Britain claimed that the soldiers were in the colonies to protect the people. But the people asked, "Protect us from whom?" As long as the French were nearby in Canada, the colonists needed the protection of the British Army and Navy. After the French were gone, following their defeat in the French and Indian War, the colonists felt they no longer needed British military protection. The British government demanded that the colonists pay higher and higher taxes. One reason was that the government wanted to show the colonists that it was in control. Another reason was that Britain was having money problems. Foreign wars had left the country with big debts. The British thought the colonists should help pay some of these debts, especially those resulting from the French and Indian War. The American colonists might have agreed, but they wanted to have a say in the decision. They wanted the right to vote about their own taxes, like the people living in Britain. But no colonists were permitted to serve in the British Parliament, so they protested that they were being taxed without being represented. In 1764, the British Parliament approved the Sugar Act. This legislation set taxes on sugar, coffee, some wines, and other products imported to America in large amounts. It increased the taxes on European products sent to the colonies through Britain. The British government also approved new measures aimed at enforcing all trade laws. And it decided to restrict the production of paper money in the colonies. The American colonists opposed all these new laws. Yet they could not agree about how to resist. Colonial assemblies approved protests against the laws, but the protests were all different and had no real effect. Business groups attempted to organize boycotts of goods, but these were not very successful until the British government approved another tax in 1765, a tax on stamps. The Stamp Act probably angered more American colonists than any earlier tax. Under this law, the colonists had to buy a British stamp for every piece of printed paper they used. That meant they would be taxed for every piece of newspaper, every document, even every playing card. The colonists refused to pay. Colonial assemblies approved resolutions suggesting that the British Parliament had no right to tax the colonies at all. Some colonists were so angry that they attacked British stamp agents. Historians say the main reason the colonists were angry was because Britain had rejected the idea of no taxation without representation. Almost no colonist wanted to be independent of Britain at that time, yet all of them valued their rights as British citizens and the idea of local self-rule. They considered the Stamp Act to be the worst in a series of violations of these rights. The American colonists refused to obey the Stamp Act. They also refused to buy British goods. Almost 1,000 store owners signed non-importation agreements. This cost British businessmen so much money that they demanded that the government cancel the Stamp Act. Parliament finally canceled the law in 1766. The colonists immediately ended their ban on British goods. But the same day that Parliament ended the Stamp Act, it approved the Declaratory Act. This was a statement saying the colonies existed to serve Britain, and that Britain could approve any law it wanted. Many American colonists considered this statement to be illegal. Historians say this shows just how separated the colonies had become from Britain. Colonial assemblies were able to approve their own laws, but only with the permission of the British Parliament. The colonists, however, considered the work of their assemblies as their own form of self-rule. Britain canceled the Stamp Act, but did not stop demanding taxes. In 1767, Parliament approved a series of new taxes called the Townshend Acts. These were named after the government official who proposed them. The Townshend Acts set taxes on glass, tea, lead, paints, and paper imported into the colonies. The American colonists rejected the Townshend Acts and started a new boycott of British goods. They also took steps to increase manufacturing in the colonies. By the end of 1769, they had reduced by half the amount of goods imported from Britain. The colonies also began to communicate with each other about their problems. In 1768, the Massachusetts General Court sent a letter to the legislatures of the other colonies. It said the Townshend Acts violated the colonists' natural and constitutional rights. When news of the letter reached London, British officials ordered the colonial governor of Massachusetts to dismiss the legislature. Then they moved 4,000 British troops into Boston, the biggest city in Massachusetts and the biggest city in the American colonies. The people of Boston hated the British soldiers. The soldiers were controlling their streets and living in their houses. This tension led to violence.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.